Is he really? Really? Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Portland City Council. Before we begin the regular part of our council, we always start our council meeting on Wednesday morning by asking, how are the children? We ask that because we know that when our children are well, the community is well. Each week, we invite a person in to talk to us about issues regarding children and youth. And today, we have Olive Carlson. She's in the third grade at Opal Charter School. Olive, could you please come forward? First of all, thank you for being here, Olive. And I noticed that you, in your background, it says you have a dog. What's your dog's name?
Tony.
Tony?
Yeah.
Okay, not Tony the Tiger, just Tony, huh?
Just Tony.
Okay. Well, thank you. So you wanted to talk with us this morning, so go ahead and begin.
Mr. Mayor and council members, I know that kids in schools are very important to you. I also know that you don't get to spend a lot of time with kids in schools. Because of that, I wanted to tell you about a project my class did this year that I think is important for you to know about. I go to Opal School, which is a charter school in the Children's Museum. My class is a second and third grade mix. One day in October, my teacher said that we would create a museum exhibit centered in our classroom. The exhibit was centered around helping people understand and notice nature. Later, we focused our work on interdependence. We used different materials to explain about insects. We worked with clay, paint, writing, poetry, and drawing. All the second and third graders worked together to write these words to tell you about our exhibit. Our exhibit helped people experience how bugs live in their perspective. It required looking close up. We talk a lot about schema in our school. Schema means what you know. If you do not have schema for something and you turn away after only a minute, you will still not have schema for it. But if you look for a long time, you will get schema for that thing. You might say, oh look, there's a grasshopper. But you need to take the time to think about why you said it in the first place. You have to see, look, and be the things you see. You must be the thing you see by understanding it. Take the time to wonder about how bugs are in their lives. The museum wasn't only about bugs, but about interdependence. It was about how we need bugs and insects to survive. It was about how bees make honey and make the flowers bloom and the trees bud. We hoped people would learn about the interdependence between all living things in the world and how close their relationship is with bugs of many kinds. Thinking about interdependence has a very good effect on people and how they treat each other and help all around them to make the world be better. While people were walking around enjoying the exhibits, we hoped that people would see their beauty and how much bugs help us, and they would think about how we can help them. Bugs are so important to life, even if they're not pretty. We wanted people to look closely at them and see how much they help the earth. When people left, we hoped they'd say, I have noticed bugs. I have helped them in every way possible. I noticed the natural world. I wish that you could have seen our museum. I hope that this gift I have for you will give you a little idea about the work we did. I hope when you make your decisions about Portland, you think about all the web of interdependency that you affect.
Could you describe this to the people out there so they can see what it is?
Yeah. This is a collage about lots of the work that the kids in my class did, and we put lots of it together to make a picture.
Well, thank you, Olive.
Thank you.
And I'm going to hang this in my office as a reminder of your visit and also your message.
Okay, thank you.
Could we give this young lady
a hand? Thank you.
Nice to know there's folks like Olive out there, huh? City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Sten?
Here.
Potter?
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity he or she is authorized to represent. Please read the first communication.
Item 388, request of Lindsay Levy to address Council regarding Artful Education Campaign.
I think all three speakers will be speaking.
389, request of Sarah Quis Mazoko to address Council regarding Artful Education Campaign. And 390, request of David Lycan to address Council regarding Artful Education Campaign.
Good morning, Lindsay.
Good morning. do I start now? Okay, so I'm slightly intimidated by this, so if I screw up, I'm really sorry. The message is good, so just pay attention to the message.
State your name for the record, and you do have 3 minutes.
Okay, so. I'm Lindsay Levy. I am a small business owner. I'm a wife, and most importantly, I'm a mom of two small kids that go to Skyline Elementary out in unincorporated Multnomah County. The motivation for the Artful Education Campaign was based on my depression over the last presidential election, when I really couldn't get out of bed. And my husband said, if they've defeated you, they've won. We all have a voice. We can choose to use it. I'm a jewelry designer. You'll each be receiving a packet with our vision statement and the Radical Mom collection that I did. The first piece I did was said, either fund education or pay for incarceration. Where I went from there was I contacted people and I said, you're a baker, you're an artist, you're a musician, you can do this too. Will you donate some of your proceeds to the schools? Every single school in Portland Public School will get the same amount of money. Everybody participating in this campaign has committed to 30 to 45% of their wholesale. We're attempting to double dip by asking the retailers to do the same. It's easy to become a pessimist, but if you can take that and become an activist, then we actually have change in our future. Since I went to school a long, long time ago, there's been an elimination of the arts and music programs. And I think if nothing else, this week has showed us that we need to offer things to our children that are better than violence in video games, but are actually things that they can create and they can express in a nonviolent way. We need this program. This will allow us to have an independent source of revenue outside of the taxpayers. Sarah and David have generously offered to step up to the plate. Sarah will be looking at doing corporate sponsorships and fundraising, and David is really good at event coordination. He has lots of experience in it, because I would like to bring the mayor's ball back, and I would like to give that money to our children, and I would like to see that our elected officials, our businesses, our parents, and people who don't have children genuinely care about their future. I'm really bold, and I'd like to see this as something that we could show to other school districts and other communities. But how are the children? Well, their futures are in our hands. So what I'm asking of you is not your money and not your time, because we can go out and get all that. But I want you to join together. I want you to talk this up. I want you to be behind it. And that's it. And that's all that we're asking. So I hope that you can get behind this. If we step on some toes, if you don't like the way things are going, talk to us. But don't nix a program, and don't say it can't be done, because I know it can. And here's Sarah or David. I don't know who's going next.
I guess I am. I'm David Lycan. I'm owner and president of Double T Concerts, which is Oregon's oldest and largest concert promotion company. As most of you know, the first mayor's ball was to celebrate the election of Bud Clark as mayor and help pay off his campaign debt. The subsequent mayor's balls took the momentum from that event and brought together the music community to produce an event that was looked forward to by many thousands of people in our community. It was endorsed by the entire city from the top down. As producer of the first mayor's ball events, we took advantage of the good feelings and esprit de corps to create an event which for a time was the envy of the national music scene. I personally signed the lease, provided the insurance, and was on the hook for the first Mayor's Ball produced by the Portland Music Association. The premise, from my view, was that the music community in Portland could and should volunteer their time and services for this one event per year. The only entities that were paid were those that provided equipment services, the IOTC union stagehands, and facility staff. The first ball we produced did about 7,000 people and barely squeaked by financially. But it clearly established the event. The second and third Mayor's Balls did each one subsequently better. It established the solvency of the Portland Music Association, and thousands of dollars were distributed to various charities in the community. Subsequently, what I call the greed factor took over, where the community spirit prevailed. When numerous people started wanting to be paid, in some cases unrealistic amounts, I and my company left the Portland Music Association and the Mayor's Ball, and even though attendance stayed solid for another ball, the money raised dwindled and the ball died. Several people tried to keep it going, but the new mayor was not supportive. This brings us to now. We ask for the official support of the mayor and the city as a kickoff to resurrect a great community event. We will try to retain this spirit and esprit de corps that graced the music scene for the early Mayor's Balls. What better cause than our schools, and especially music in Portland public schools? We hope to provide the impetus for putting these programs back in our schools and provide some funding for them. Hopefully the musicians in the community around them can be rallied to this cause. Please give us your official support, because I believe it will help rally the troops. Hopefully many of the new generation musicians will see the need and find it in their hearts to help us bring back this one-of-a-kind event and to raise money and awareness for a great cause. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Sarah Quist Mazzocco. I have three boys in the Portland Public Schools system, one at Lincoln, two at Chapman. I have done a lot of fundraising for Portland Public Schools. It's been very frustrating the amount of time I've spent to try and keep programs and not in the classroom. I think it's critical that we try and bring back these programs that we've lost. Something that wasn't mentioned earlier, that we do have Artful Education is a 501c3, so it is a nonprofit. It's already set up. I have the fun job of going out and raising money for it. I will be looking for corporate sponsorships over the summer for the Mayor's Ball. I will be looking for individual sponsors for the Mayor's Ball. Part of my job also will be to keep the budget down. That means having things donated. That means the musicians playing for free. That means the Memorial Coliseum being donated for free. So I really, you know, I'm very passionate about it. I feel it's a great thing that Lindsay has come up with. And we hope we have your support. It'll make my job easier as I walk in to talk to these companies saying, you know, the city's behind it, the commissioner's behind it, the mayor's behind it. So I will be very short and brief with you. I hope you're with us, and we think it's going to be a great event for our schools. Thank you.
We have like a minute and a half left. Can I add something?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Like, Portland Public Schools is totally behind this. It was actually Vicki Phillips that I went to at first, and it's been her team that has said, we have to bring in all the superintendents, which I love, because you can't look at children just in our area. The world is a complete place. So all the superintendents we're trying to bring on board. We've enclosed the vision letter. All of the designers on board. I've already approached merchants. I haven't heard a no, and I don't want to start here. So,
it would help my job immensely.
As the Arts and Culture Commission, I think this is great. We've actually got about three other groups that are working on something very similar. So what I'd like to do is working with the mayor's office. And I think the Mayor's Ball is a great idea to bring back. But I'd also like to make sure that we're coordinating this with some other musical events, live music events, and other events that are sort of dedicated to similar purposes. And I think that can be done. But so Kevin in the mayor's office, Jesse Beeson in my office, if you want to stop by on the way out, pick up his card. I think he's at a meeting this morning, but would look forward to working with you.
So, Sarah, if you can promise me that your husband, John, will go back in his role as one of the backup players in the band of Curtis Salgado.
You just missed it last 2 Sundays
ago. I will get on the phone and help you raise money.
Perfect, oh, I promise. I'll get him to do it.
It's on video tape.
Well, and I completely support you folks. As you know, my wife's been working on this with you for several months now, and you've really done a lot of hard work, and you've got some great ideas. Lindsay, I did have a question about the value of this necklace that you gave us.
And you know what? I prepared all that. They're all worth under $50. And if you, I don't usually make them for guy necks, so if you need them a little bit longer, just let me know, and I can add a little extender to them. And if you want any more radical sayings than those, I have those as well.
So you need to give us your contact information because we have to declare it as a gift.
Okay, I can do that.
She didn't know.
That was behind your question.
That's right.
Yeah.
We don't want to get
it. Yeah, it's actually on the sign up sheet.
Okay,
we got all the information.
Okay. Thanks for all your work.
Thank you very much.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Cool.
And that. Commissioner Leonard's promise is on videotape.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Give him a long list.
Please call the next.
391, request of James B. Lee to address council regarding state of the charter review election.
Clear this, Mr. Mayor.
All right.
Left on the chair.
Thanks for being here. Please state your name when you speak, and you have 3 minutes.
Excuse me, I've got a rather bad cold. My name is James Lee. I reside on Southeast Mitchell Street, and I want to thank you for hearing me this morning. I'm here on Measure 2691. We've all heard a lot about that. I think I have a few original things and important things to say about it. I am not representing any of the groups or opposing it or supporting it, and I'm here speaking entirely on my own. My main concern... looking at the report when I first saw it, was that it seems that there are two subjects in this measure, one of which is form of government, one of which is powers of government. And we all know that, you can't have two subjects on a ballot measure in the state of Oregon. So I looked a little bit farther into some of the details on it, and I discovered, of course, that we have established a chief administrative officer. And on the other hand, we have also in power 50, we have empowered censorship of media, including advertising. Now, I can't imagine two more disparate subjects than those. So I think that there is something to the two-subject approach to this. And I'd like to look at a couple of contingencies. If the measure passes, I think its opponents probably will go to court to try to have it set aside. On the other hand, if it fails, I think we're in a real pickle, because the question is, do both of the subjects fail? In fact, if it does, if we both subjects of it do fail, which would seem to be the logical thing, then the city of Portland doesn't have any more enumerated powers. And I think this is a very serious situation, a very difficult structural situation. Of course, that would be intolerable. We couldn't have that. I've tried to weasel around that argument, and I really can't do it. I think that the only sensible approach, the only functional approach to this, which would be to dodge that bullet of losing our enumerated powers if the measure fails, would be to pull it from the ballot now, if that's at all possible, reboot it with a separate enumerated power amendment or whatever, a measure, and then go for it again in November or something like that. The problem is that we've attached the existing enumerated powers to it. If we had new enumerated powers to it, that wouldn't be much of a problem because one would replace the other. Here, if we defeat our current enumerated powers, we may be left without them. Thank you.
Thank you.
392, request of Bill Parrish to address council regarding proposed charter review for the city.
Thanks
for
being here.
Mayor Potter.
Please state your name when you speak. You have 3 minutes.
My name is Bill Parrish, resident of the city of Portland. And the reason I'm here this morning is to
I try and help encourage you, Mayor Potter and others, to reconsider your support of the charter change. And my sense is that it's really a Trojan horse. The current system works. And we had a big lesson recently with Neil Goldschmidt and the effects of absolute power. And, of course, that would never happen under the current administration, but and he made a science out of lining his own pockets at the expense of the community. And this current system has such an ideal sense of balance in that Commissioner Sten was able to lead some serious dialogue in the Texas Pacific Group, followed up by Commissioner Leonard. What's also interesting to me is there's so many great things happening in the city of Portland right now. And there's so many more things that can be done. One big controversy, of course, was the Northwest parking situation. On one end, you have Williams-Sonoma and the Potty Barn, and then down the street, you have an organization, Music Millennium, which may lose its lease, according to the paper. It's been there 25 years, has 200 shows a year, so kind of a bellwether for the community. Apparently, they're trying to negotiate a new lease with Dick Singer. So, you know, one of the things the city council could do, since Dick Singer gets a lot of benefit from development projects, is maybe give him a call and encourage him to help him out. Texas Pacific was defeated, but the next question is, what next? Well, the biggest buyout in history has occurred in Texas of a utility. So clearly there'll be another effort to take over PGE. And then we've got the Linton community situation. It was very interesting to me in that that was voted down by the council. Here was a bunch of community activists that got together. And at the same time, Warren Buffett, right after he took over Pacific Power, his plan is to build many new coal plants in Utah. And so here we, there was no dialogue on Pacific Power, so we're financing these construction of coal plants in Utah, which they're very against, and we're worried about the environmental consequences of, approving a community plan in Linton. And then my final comment is it's so interesting. I gave a speech last week at a pension conference, and it was on plan choices and fees, and there were two people in the audience of about 100 that were rather upset. When I finished, they were very upset, actually. And they were investment managers, because what I did was I disclosed what was going on with some of these fees. So, Mayor Potter, this is a thing that's starting to percolate around the country, and it specifically relates to 403B and 457 plans. And so what I might ask you and the council is to just answer one simple question over the next year, and that is, of all these vendors that are selling all these investment products to city employees, just have one of your staff people stack it all up and say, what's the overall gain and what kind of risk they're taking and what are the fees? Now, you might have an employee that could do a blog for all the other, which is what's happened in Los Angeles with the city employees and the school district. So I appreciate, again, the opportunity to be here. And many great things are happening in Portland right now. And I really hope, Mayor Potter, that you'll withdraw your support for the charter change because, again, you have consummate credibility. You're one of the most popular mayors in history. Everyone's happy, and sometimes it's hard to see that this is really about long after you rather than the current administration. Thank you.
Thank you. Is that it?
That's all the communications.
Okay, we'll move to the consent agenda. Any commissioners wish to pull any items off the consent agenda? Does any member of this audience wish to pull any items off the consent agenda? Please call the roll.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read the 9:30 time certain.
Item 393, accept and endorse the Portland Green Streets Policy and Green Streets Cross Bureau Phase 2 Report.
Commissioner Adams.
Thank you, Mayor, Council members. I am pleased today to bring forward for Council consideration a Green Street Report and Policy. The reasons for doing this are many. They fundamentally stem from the fact that we get, on average, 37 inches of rain a year, producing over 18 billion gallons of stormwater, water that hits pervious surfaces, collecting chemicals before it goes into a pipe or a watershed or a river. And much of that it comes from the streets and roads that we as city government own and are responsible for on behalf of taxpayers. What today's policy does is move forward some very excellent research and development work that has been underway in the Bureau of Environmental Services, the Portland Office of Transportation, with help from the Office of Sustainable Development, Bureau of Planning, Bureau of Water Works, Bureau of Parks, and other bureaus, moves it from the R&D, the piloting, which is sort of broken ground, nationally and internationally and moves it into the realm of policy, the way that we will do business day in and day out. Its benefits are, you're going to hear in greater detail in a minute, but its benefits include the fact that we have the opportunity to save money, that instead of just building bigger pipes in parts of town that are right now experiencing basement flooding, that we can take the stormwater off the system, keep it out of those pipes, and save significant resources. At the same time, we achieve another benefit, and that is recharging the groundwater. Not well known, up to 30% of our watersheds in the Willamette River come up from below. And we want as much water coming up from below from groundwater because it is cool. It is, as in cold, not only cool, but cold. It is also clean. And that, in turn, helps keep the Willamette and our watershed streams and rivers clean. As everyone in this room probably knows, but for those viewing, we have significant environmental challenges with the Willamette River, given that we have two species of salmon that are listed as endangered, and we have a designated Superfund site that we are in the process of ascertaining the exact pollution factors and what it'll take to clean it up. It improves air quality. It improves air quality by reducing the heat island effect. And with the heat island effect is where we get air pollution trapped. And so stormwater, swales, green areas, trees, those all reduce the heat island effect and therefore the pollution. It also provides for urban green spaces and greenways that are possible in every part of the city, especially those parts of the city like in the central city or main streets that are built out, such as Clinton Division, that you might hear someone from today. It gives us an opportunity to introduce greenway and in the right-of-way that is otherwise up to this point mostly been reserved for parking strip, trees, and pervious surface. It also is an important opportunity to expand urban habitat. The city of Chicago has even gone skipped over this step and gone to having an urban Audubon strategy, habitat strategy, and those are issues that we're looking at as well. But for those of you that you know, aren't convinced with any of those, and I'll just leave you with before we hear from some key staff and the public, is that if a generation ago had sought this approach, we would not be spending the $1.4 billion that we are spending now on the big pipe and the CSO program, because we wouldn't have the kind of stormwater-related overflows into the Willamette River. So we are saving money now, we are improving the environment, and we will be saving money for the next generation because we're going to make that big pipe project last many more years than has been anticipated. Portland is looked to as a national leader in this area, and Commissioner Dan Saltzman and Commissioner Eric Sten were commissioners in charge when this effort got going, the R&D got going. And along the way has been Dean Marriott, the leader of Environmental Services, and Linda Dobson, who's been working on this issue. And I want to thank you both for your leadership, your hard work, and moving us from innovator in R&D to widespread application on the ground.
Thank you. Mayor, Commissioner Dean Marriott, Environmental Services Director, with me, as Commissioner Adams said, is Linda Dobson, who's in charge of our sustainable stormwater section in the Bureau of Environmental Services. I just have a few brief remarks to make. First, I'd like to note, just to underscore what Commissioner Adams said, just Monday I was invited to Washington, D.C. to make a presentation on the very subject you're going to hear about. I spoke before over 100 local officials from the Washington, D.C. Council of Governments, and then in the afternoon was invited to participate in a meeting at EPA National Headquarters, where this subject was the subject of the day, and about 50 staff people, including the administrator of EPA, was there to participate in that meeting. Portland was only one of three communities invited to to the afternoon session. Portland, Chicago, and Washington, D.C. were participants. So we really are trailblazers, to borrow a phrase, in this arena, and we're proud to be serving in that role. Linda will describe for you the process that we've gone through. It's been very collaborative. As the commissioner said, we involved all of the different bureaus of the city, involved a lot of citizen participation and outside expertise to bring this report to you. We identified in the report obstacles to making progress and identified solutions to those obstacles, and many of those solutions are already underway, I'm pleased to say. Just as an example of what the commissioner means by taking it from the occasional demonstration project, which I think a lot of you have seen perhaps in your own neighborhood, to more full-scale implementation, we're now working on a sub-basin of our system in southeast Portland. We call it the Taggart D drainage area, but for many of you, it's from Mount Tabor to the river, essentially, along the Division and Hawthorne corridor, that part of the city. It's 2.3 square miles. It's about 2% of the city's land area. 7,000 Portlanders live in that area. So we're really stepping up to implement this in a targeted area, but in a big way. And I'll talk about that for just a moment. In the pre-design for solving the problems associated with that part of the city, we've identified over 500 Green Street opportunities. And we're going to be moving forward in the next few years to get those on the ground. These include over 450 curb extensions, and you'll see pictures of some of those in a moment, and over 40 vegetated planters. What this is going to mean is it's going to mean less basement flooding in this area. It's going to mean a modernization of the sewer collection system. It's going to mean a healthier environment. It's going to mean more Portland citizens coming back into connection with nature. So all of those benefits. Just to give you an idea of what we have to accomplish between now and the year 2040, our goal is to take off of the right-of-way over a billion gallons a year of stormwater. And the commissioner mentioned we're having to deal with about 18 billion gallons a year of stormwater that hits our impervious surfaces. So we think that green streets and this technology and this approach will be very effective and very cost-effective at helping to set us up for a bright environmental future. Thank you. Linda?
Thank you. Linda Dobson, Bureau of Environmental Services. I wanted today to review the report and the resolution and the citywide policy, which we're proposing for adoption. But just as a little bit of history, I want to remind you that in the fall of 2005, we started this effort. It was a two-phase effort, and we came to you in March of 2006 with the first phase report to be adopted. So you've already endorsed that report. You've heard that this has been a multi-bureau effort. That's very true. We have worked very closely with all our partners, and I want to take really an opportunity to specifically thank a steering committee composed of individuals from those different bureaus, Byron Estes from PDC, Susan Hartnett from Waterworks, Liz Moorhead and Steve Townsend from PDOT, Dave McAllister from Parks and Recreation, and Joe Zender from Planning. So you can see it was really a multi-bureau, cross-bureau effort. I also want to thank Julie Wilson and Libby Smith from Enviro Issues for their help throughout the process. The charge from the commissioner was pretty clear. It was to create a programmatic approach to the implementation of green streets, to really move into full-scale implementation, and to find out what were those opportunities and challenges that would either help us get there or keep us from getting there. So I mentioned what you have today before you is the product of that effort. But this city and the many staff and people associated with the bureaus have been working on green streets for some time. And this effort has really expanded beyond just the cross-bureau effort. So I wanted to acknowledge all the people and all the staff in the bureaus who are working to make this happen. And when I say we, now from the rest of our presentation, I really mean that full complement of city staff. And as a reminder, green streets are using a natural system approach to stormwater management. We're using the plants and the soil to detain and filter and infiltrate the stormwater where we can. And we're doing it in such a way that is really creating an urban amenity. So I think this is a good example of a green street in front of New Seasons on Southeast Division. It's clearly enhanced the streetscape. And some folks back east are beginning to talk in terms of restorative redevelopment. and we say that the city redevelops every 40 years. We have a great opportunity through these kinds of projects to really bring the nature, the environment, all those environmental benefits back into our urban areas as we redevelop. So a green street is a vegetated facility that manages stormwater on site at the surface. And at this time, that is our definition. But it's more, and it's been fun to see the evolution in our process since our beginning. In the beginning, we just started with a definition that included the stormwater benefits. But over time, we've really changed that to recognize the multiple benefits for the city. As we do these, obviously we have water quality benefits. We know that we can replenish the groundwater, but we can also create attractive streetscapes. We can enhance pedestrian safety. We can also create improved bicycle access as we transform the streetscape. We can create new urban greenways linking parks and neighborhoods and businesses. And we can increase the community value, and we believe the property value of adjacent neighbors. So it's an important transformation in thinking of just a stormwater facility to a larger urban amenity. We mentioned that in the beginning we started to identify what are the opportunities and challenges to getting us to this full-scale implementation. We surveyed ourselves internally as well as those in the business community and the development community, and we heard back three main points. Show us how it's done. Give us some information, outreach to us so we can better understand what green streets are. And that was voiced by the professional community, the development community, the neighbors, and the neighborhoods as well. Also, we heard, give us that technical guidance to really show us how to build it. Show us how you'll look at it so that we can get these approved through the permit process. And then lastly in this line is the stormwater master plan. Show us how you can really take a comprehensive look and guide the development. Instead of having one developer come in one parcel at a time, show us an example of what it would look like to take a full-scale approach. On the challenge side, we heard a constant refrain of how are these going to be maintained? So we knew we had to address that question. We knew also that we needed to protect our underground infrastructure. If we're going to be infiltrating water in places where we didn't infiltrate before, how could we protect the underground infrastructure? And as we move into this new way of doing things, what are the resources that we're going to make available to really make sure this happens? In phase two, I think the strongest direction was create a policy, create a citywide policy to be the framework for this Green Street implementation. That's what you have before you today, which is a part of the resolution. Why did we feel that the policy was so important? Well, we do have stormwater regulations, and we do have regulations that require going to a Green Street approach as your first preference. But quite honestly, without the strong underpinning of a policy basis, there are ways to find around that. When you come to a push and a shove about competing uses in a public right-of-way. We wanted to be sure that the Green Street as a facility had equal standing with the pedestrian and the bicycle so that we were really charged to combine those together. We wanted to raise the expectation among all bureaus, among all developers, among all citizens that we were committed to Green Streets as a policy. So that's why you have the policy here today. I've run through on the bulleted list a little bit of what is in the policy. You have it before you. As I mentioned, we already have a stormwater manual that requires on-site surface stormwater treatment. This policy gives additional emphasis to that. But we've also created a new piece to that, which we're calling the 1% for Green Street Fund. Many of our projects automatically trigger the stormwater manual requirements. There are some exceptions to that, and very small projects do not trigger the manual. And we wanted to make sure that for every piece of work that's going on in the right-of-way, we were able to capture some dollars to contribute to a Green Street Fund. And so that's a piece of this policy. We have details still to work out. But for those projects occurring in the right-of-way that are publicly funded, we're asking a 1% contribution into a Green Street Fund. The other subjects here talk about really getting out in front and planning and designing together as a city, having better communication, really looking large scale at what it means to do green streets on a neighborhood-wide basis, to continue to use innovation and design, and to evolve our standards and incentives. We want to make sure that we're leveraging dollars to get the best money, the best work that we can in specific geographic areas. So if we have the Bureau of Environmental Services working in an area, we might couple with the Transportation Bureau, with our water partners to advance Green Street projects. Outreach, obviously, I've mentioned, and project evaluation is critical. We spent some concentrated time now looking at what works, what doesn't, and we continue to monitor them. We want to report back to you every year what our evaluation is of our Green Street monitoring. So just to touch a little bit on some of the products of the effort and beyond, I mentioned the policy. We knew that the outreach was very important. People said, well, what about if people move? You have new neighbors in the area. How are they going to know that's a green street? We've created facility markers that will go in and be attached. We've created door hangers that will be left every time maintenance work is done at their facility. We've created a Green Street newsletter. We have a PowerPoint presentation that we're taking out to the community to educate both the professionals as well as the neighborhoods. And we're currently developing a website that will be specific just to Green Streets. We've clarified our maintenance policy. We've also created, and the bureaus have worked very hard to create specific technical sheets so that people know how deep, what kind of curbs to put in place, what are the soils, so that people really know how to build these, both publicly and privately. We've gone ahead and we've started work on a stormwater master plan for the Gateway Central District. We're working very closely with PDC and transportation on this master plan. Again, as developers come in piecemeal, we want to take an overall holistic look. We want to profile these green streets for the layperson, not just the technical standards, but what will these look like so that people can begin to envision what their neighborhood might look like. And we've requested an EPA appropriation of $3.1 million to help us in our work. That will be $1.56 million for 08 and $1.5 million for 09. We also know that if we don't get together early on in our own capital improvement programming between the bureaus, we won't be as successful in identifying projects. An example of this, at People's Co-op, the transportation folks were out looking and working on pedestrian safety concerns on Southeast 21st. We coupled with them, and where they would have put in a typical curb extension, we were able to work with them to put in a stormwater curb extension as well. So you've solved pedestrian safety issues as well as stormwater issues, and we incorporated bicycle parking, which was badly needed at this location. So we have a full spectrum of enhancements. We're also working with the Water Bureau on Southeast 59th right now, where we can couple some of their project work with some of our project work for Taggart pre-design and some of our own pipe replacement and end up with a green street at the end of the day. And that project, I'll emphasize, is really still in the planning phase, and there's more work to be done. We also wanted to be proactive and see how we could help the neighborhoods achieve their goals in our processes. We've identified Southeast Clay Street as an excellent opportunity to create a route to the river, and I should say we. The neighborhoods have long had this on their list of a wish list, to be able to better walk and bike from Ladd's Addition to the river. We have some new opportunities with the redevelopment of the Holman Building on the Esplanade, to really create a linkage between those green spaces. And we can do that with stormwater facilities as well as enhanced bicycle and pedestrian ways. That project is just beginning, and our partners are PDC and PDOT, Hand and Buckman neighborhoods, and the Central East Side Industrial District. This is just a quick image of what it might look like. And I'll just quickly wrap up with some images of what some newer projects. These are along Sandy. They are recently completed. This was a PDOT project. Again, multi-effort between the different bureaus and outside consultants. This really shows you what you can do when you have an expanded right-of-way. We hope to see these kind of facilities in our planning and designs for Burnside Cooch as we have more work and more area to work in. You can see you create stopping places and areas of interest. The third, there are six planters on southeast or northeast Sandy. This is the third. I'm sure you're all familiar with the HAP and the City project at New Columbia. We have 132 separate facilities at this location. Clearly, it's an enhancement to the neighborhood and to the streetscape. I couldn't resist putting this photo in. It's Hummer meets the Green Street. We really hope to maybe get a different billboard here that can be educational, which would be nice.
Where is that one?
That's on Sandy. And I just wanted to close with a quote from Mike Lindquist. This is not Mike shown in the picture. But his quote to me, having lived next to Northeast Siskiyou for 3 years, is that he loves his street garden. And where else are you going to have someone talking about loving their street? Where else would you find someone referring to a stormwater facility as a street garden? So I think these have been tremendously successful. And we do have someone from the neighborhood here to testify as well as others. So thank you very much.
But before you leave, I just wanted to underscore my appreciation, Linda, and you've been working on this for a very long time. And in the past 2 years, you've been very responsive, and I want to thank you for all the great work you've done before I got the assignment and since I've been the commissioner in charge. You're considered a national expert in this, and rightly so.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. As Linda said, we have some folks here to talk with you, and then if you do have questions for us, we'll be glad to come back.
Thank you.
Do you have enough names?
Lisa, do I have names, or were they signed up? Or Linda, Bob.
Do you want them off the public sign-up list?
Yes. You can go ahead and come forward, though, while we're getting that. Move things along here. Come on up.
I'm Greg Baker, resident of Northeast Portland, and Mike Lindquist is my neighbor, the one that loves his bioswale, and we love our garden, too. My wife, Rebecca Bauer, and I have lived on the corner of Northeast 35th Place in Siskiyou for over 23 years. We thank the city for inviting our neighborhood to participate in the Green Street Project. Thank you for installing these attractive bioswales in our neighborhood. I'm a bird watcher and a card-carrying member of the Portland Audubon Society, although I have to admit that I don't have my card on me at the moment. However, I'm happy to report that birds appear to really like our Green Street bioswales. Our neighbors across the street, the Lindquists, watch birds too, and we've both been planning our yards for years, specifically to attract urban wildlife. So when presented with the city's offer to put in these amenities to replace concrete parking with wetland-like habitat, it was a no-brainer, a resounding yes. People of all ages stop by and they read the interpretive sign. They pause to ponder these curious yet simple engineering marvels of stormwater management. The questions that I most often hear are, how did you get the city to put these in? And how can we get some on our street? Maintaining these systems has been easy. It's been fun. Since 2003, I've probably spent a couple of hours pulling some weeds and picking up the occasional piece of litter. Many small children in our neighborhood use Siskiyou Street as a playground with their kickballs and their sidewalk chalk. The street is now safer because the traffic entry into Siskiyou off of 35th Place is a single lane. So cars simply have to slow down. To date, we haven't witnessed any traffic accidents or parking conflicts, none. Last evening, as I parked on a Green Street, I thought to myself, what a huge difference such a small effort can make. I wondered how the landscape appeared 150 years ago, like the center of the mural above there, perhaps. A few dirt roads and plank roads, maybe, plenty of stumps, lots of mud. Our sidewalk is an original. It was stamped 1912. So 100 years back, hard surfaced roads were already beginning to spread across the landscape to accommodate the automobile. And back then, road engineers apparently didn't spend much time anticipating and managing the foreseeable impacts of stormwater and its potential effects on water quality and wildlife. And so today we find ourselves dealing with the consequences of the past's inadequate local planning. But on a broader and regional scale, it's the same old story. We should have been thinking globally and acting locally. Presently, our little Green Street corner on Siskiyou soaks up about 250,000 gallons of stormwater each year. If not for the city's recent Green Street improvements, this runoff would otherwise continue to contribute to peak river flows, which scour out river bottom habitat, increase turbidity, deposit silt and chemicals into sensitive habitats. Today, the Green Street program offers a real cost-effective opportunity to make a simple course correction on how we collectively manage Portland's stormwater. Once implemented on a larger scale, the program promises to yield substantial community and environmental benefits for generations to come. My family and neighbors are in favor of the Green Street program. We applaud the city's efforts thus far, and we encourage your continued support and expansion of this fledgling program through whatever resources available. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Linda Nedekoven, 2018 Southeast Ladd Avenue, Hosford Abernathy neighbor and vice chair of the Neighborhood Association. I wasn't planning to testify today, but I can't resist coming up to express the incredible gratitude and appreciation our neighborhood has for being involved with BES in creating quite a number of these alternative stormwater features in our neighborhood. And wanted especially to stress that our neighborhood remains incredibly ready to step up to the plate and help in any way we can in this effort. We've been committed to it since the beginning. We've been pushing since the beginning for this interbureau collaboration because we'd be watching paving happen and no opportunity to talk about that, you know, talk with people about how we might incorporate stormwater as that street's being redone. So we're very delighted at the collaboration that's occurring here. The notion of roots to the river, that's more than a wish, it's a mantra. We've been, ever since the Esplanade was built, our neighborhoods on the inner tier have been promised access to the river, and to have access that's also incorporates something beautiful, as well as getting us there safely, is quite wonderful. We just really want to find ways. We're forever bothering staff with, could we put one here? How about could we put one there? We've got another neighbor who's interested. If anything, there's a question of resources and can we keep up with the idea, with the demand once the idea spreads? And we're definitely willing to help spread it. So thank you.
You guys have been great. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Bob Salinger, and I'm testifying on behalf of the Audubon Society of Portland this morning. I couldn't really say it any better than the young lady that testified at the beginning of the session today when she said, I hope that when you make your decisions about Portland, you think about the interdependent web of life. I think that really says it all. And I think cities have an incredible role to play in preserving biodiversity and reversing, not just reducing, but reversing the environmental trends that are plaguing our planet. And I had the great good fortune of testifying before ODF&W last Friday when they delisted peregrine falcons after 37 years of effort. And what I could tell them was very exciting to me. I could tell them that Portland had played a significant role in recovery. Not that just that we hadn't caused more decline, but that we were actually represented 5% of the known peregrine nest sites in the state and the two most productive nest sites. And I put that out there today as an example of the fact that we can make a positive difference. I think too often we just try and reduce the problems. The big pipe reduces the problems. Green Streets reverses the problem. And this is exactly where we need to be going. We're here to strongly support the Green Streets program today, to congratulate Commissioner Adams, BES, and particularly Linda Dobson on their work on this. We think it's an incredible program. We participated in a variety of different ways on BES committees over the last 4 years, and I want to emphasize that we have incredible science on this stuff. We have outstanding science, some of the best scientific minds working on this, the agencies working on this. We know as much as we're going to know by thinking. We need to now learn by doing, and we are pioneers, and we need to start doing on a landscape-level scale. We've done the pilot projects for a long time. What's exciting about this is we are converting to that landscape-level approach where we'll truly make a difference. Will there be problems on the way? Of course, but I think for too long we've hesitated because the science isn't perfect. It never will be. That's the nature of science. Green streets obviously make sense from an economic, ecological, livability perspective. They also make sense in terms of meeting multiple agency mandates and breaking down bureau silos. I want to make one significant point today, and that is that we've been here before. We were here last year talking about the watershed management plan. We talk a very, very good game in the city. We don't always follow through as well. And I would point to the green efforts for stormwater as one of those cases in point. When it comes time to actually fund these projects, we're much more hesitant to do so. When it comes time to really holding the Bureau's feet to the fire in implementation, we're hesitant to do so. And I would point to a couple of things. When the city listed its cross-bureau priorities this budget cycle, this did not pop out. It was mentioned briefly, but it didn't pop out. We really need to force the bureaus to work together and do this on a landscape-level scale. Secondly, we really need to look for long-term funding strategies. We scrounged for $1.5 million this year for the Watershed Investment Fund, but we need to be thinking much more broadly. The 1% for green streets is a great start, but we should be thinking about things like capitalizing green street trees, water bill checkoffs for sustainable stormwater, penalties for environmental crimes going to this kind of work, working with the foundations, working with the agencies. Audubon, I know a lot of other groups stand ready to partner with the city, and I would suggest that we shift from some of the advisory committee focus that we've had to date to an implementation committee that really looks at broad-scale funding. Get NOAA Fisheries, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, ODF&W, Audubon, Willamette Riverkeepers together in one room, and let's try and move this thing from $1.5 million or $2 million a year to the $30, $40, $50 million it's going to take. There's a huge amount of willingness to invest out there, but I don't think we're leveraging all the support, and there's nothing but support. What you've heard from the citizens today, we hear from all of our members. This stuff is incredibly popular. Let's turn this into something that really is phenomenal and exemplary, and I'll end there.
Well, I just want to publicly thank the Audubon Society of Portland, and I also want to thank you personally, Bob, for all your advocacy on this issue and a whole host of other issues that we work on in PDOT and BES. Thank you.
I have John Tyler, Tom Putman, and Brian Wagner.
Minutes, or are you just unlimited? All right.
Yeah, they're all 3 minutes.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, please state your name for the record, and you each have 3 minutes.
Okay. Would you like to go first?
Go ahead.
Okay. My name is John Tyler, and I'm the vice chair of the Portland Utility Review Board. I want to say thank you, Mayor and Commissioners, for the opportunity to speak with you today. Also, for the ongoing opportunity that the PURB has to discuss with you the issues that we see that have the potential to have utility rate impacts for the citizens that pay those rates. I'm really happy to be able to say that the Portland Utility Review Board has reviewed the Green Streets Initiative. We have kicked it around many times in a number of different meetings, and I'm glad to say that we're able to support it. I need to be fair and say that not all members of our group voted for it, but the majority did. And so, for the benefit of those people who aren't here today, I'd like to read the statement, which you're getting a copy of now, which is the words that we agreed to in our meeting. But I wanted to, before I read the statement, I just wanted to say thank you to Commissioner Adams' office, also to Linda Dobson, Bureau of Environmental Services, for helping us learn more about this very important topic and feel like we're playing part in what I see as a great opportunity. And I think Mr. Salinger put it very well that we've done a lot of thinking on this issue, and putting some of those thoughts into action will allow us to better understand how those actions may be a benefit to the citizens. So I'd like to read the statement that the PURB has agreed to. The PURB supports the concept of the Green Streets Initiative. We believe that this initiative will benefit the City of Portland, its citizens, and utility ratepayers. Implementation of this policy may lead to a positive rate impact by encouraging city bureaus and departments to work together on projects that have overlapping service and maintenance responsibilities. Treating stormwater on site or where it falls can result